Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Maggie, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, Jo. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, listen, it's such a pleasure to meet you because I absolutely loved your book. Pretty Ears is one of those page-turning books. I just couldn't put it down. And I'm a great fan of Gillian Flynn. Gone Girl had me totally strapped to my sunbed last summer. But yours is really up there because I love the way you told it. It was told in a very kind of clever way. It's a very engaging story. And I wanted to talk to you first. How did the book come about?
How did it come about? Well, I think that the original idea for it was sort of planted many years ago. I read a really short newspaper article about two girls who had been abducted in California who didn't know each other.
Right.
And two were held captive by a man for a few days.
Okay. So they're from are they from the same town?
They were from the same city, but they were from sort of other sides of the track. They didn't know each other. They had very different lives.
Okay. And so this is the sort of seed of the story, and you've taken that kind of premise into Pretty Ears, haven't you? So you've got two girls. So it's the story of these two girls. How old are they?
They're 12.
So you've got these two lovely, innocent girls who get abducted by this guy and taken out to a cabin in the forest for a summer. But actually, you don't tell their story from the start. What you do is you tell the story from Carly Mae's and Hannah, here she is in the book, point of view later on. And we have, tell us a bit about that, about why you chose to tell the story as them as grown-ups.
Well, I was really interested in the aftermath of their experience. I wanted to think about how an experience like that would shape you, how it would affect your life. And so I was really interested in how the girls would have grown up and become women and how their memories of that summer would have sort of affected who they became and what their hangups were and how they dealt with other people, how they dealt with men. But I also wanted to think about and to explore how they were still important to each other, even though they hadn't seen each other for almost 20 years.
It's very interesting because you really pull on that about that kind of connection that they have. But when we meet them in the front story, they have totally changed their lives and they've changed their identities and they haven't been in touch with each other. So tell us a bit about how you chose what they did for a living.
Well, everyone always laughs because Lois is a university professor, which is what I happen to be as well. And I always point out, well, she teaches the 18th century novel and I teach the 19th century novel. So obviously we have nothing
different,
in common. But the truth is, it made sense to me that Lois was obsessed with words. She was obsessed with language. She was obsessed with narrative. She loved those things even as a child. She was a great reader. They spend a lot of their time in the cabin reading books and sort of putting on little performances based on the mysteries that they're reading. So it made sense to me that would be a career path that she would pursue.
Yeah. I love the whole spelling bee thing that you put in. There's a motif for her where you keep putting in words that she thinks of a word and then she thinks of words that could be related to it that have the same spelling or same beginning of the spelling word. And it's brilliant because they start to really make sense about what she's thinking. And it's a really clever little thing that I loved actually all the way through.
Oh, thank you. It was really fun to do, actually. It was really fun to come up with Lois's word lists. A way to make them sort of significant. Not to hit people over the head with them, but to make those words mean something increasingly throughout the novel. It made sense that Carly Mae would be an actress. I mean, she always meant to be an actress, and she starts out as a model, and then she gets into acting. And her career is sort of floundering when the novel starts. But
thing about the beauty pageant and how she plays up to that. And actually, when she's in the cabin, there's a wonderful bit where we can just see her being this precocious 12-year-old, and we know that she's got this kind of aura about her that she can just turn on the charm, which is really, it was really well written. I love that bit. Tell me, Maggie, did you always have the title?
I did, as a matter of fact. And the funny thing is that initially my editor wasn't that keen on it. And she was sort of suggesting some other possibilities. But then it grew on her. The more she thought about the novel, the more it came to make sense to her. And I was really glad of that because it was important to me, and I had it in my mind from the very start.
RadioGorgeous.com.
I love the fact that you called it Pretty Ears, and it was something that came up through the book quite a lot. And there's a brilliant passage that I really love near the beginning, actually, about prettiness, and about there's a wonderful bit where Chloe is talking about getting a part in a movie and how she looks, and she says so she's really pretty, but it's like she doesn't even know it. People would say that admiringly of certain girls. Only then can you forgive a girl for being pretty if she's an idiot or a liar. And actually, I love this kind of honesty that you have in the book about prettiness and about girls and their own sense of prettiness. And girls have their own sense of their own power of their looks. And that's very much something that comes out during the course of the novel, isn't it? About their power in the cabin and then over men later on in life.
Right. Chloe especially is really conscious of that. And she has been since she was a girl.
Yeah. One of your characters, obviously, we're talking about teacher, about Lois being a teacher. Uh-huh. So you teach English and creative writing at the University of West Georgia. So how did your students react to your book?
My students have been wonderful, actually. They have been really great. A lot of them have read it. They bring me their books to sign. They come to my readings. Yeah. So my students have been incredibly supportive. But it's funny, when I read at the university, I read a couple of the sections involving Sean, the student, the sort of student stalker that starts to.
I wonder about
it. He's a really creepy character, and I wondered how he would seem to students. And they found him pretty amusing, actually.
Well, it was interesting because Lois, in the story, she starts to write a sequel to the story, and she starts, she can't really let the story go. And I wondered, by the time you got to the end of it, had you let this particular story go as a writer, or did you have that urge that she has to just continue it on and find out what happens? Did you feel afterwards, oh, I could do a sequel?
Yeah, it's funny that you should ask that, because when I was writing it, I had no sense that I was writing a novel that could go on, that wasn't just going to be over and done with. But people started asking me if I was thinking about a sequel. That was the first thing that happened. And then I realized that the characters were still very much with me.
Yeah.
And I realized, I could go back. I could go back to these characters, and it might be fun. So in fact, I've been sort of tossing around some possibilities for ways that I could do that. I don't know if I will, but I could.
But I think, well, it's interesting because I found myself thinking, oh, I want to know what happens next, because the way, I don't want to give away the story, obviously, to our listeners, who I urge, please go and get this book because it's fabulous. The story, by the end of it, there is a moment where the characters come together, and we are expecting it all the way through, so I'm not really giving too much away to know that this story is converging at a certain point. And actually, you get all the strands of the story so brilliantly together, but by the time it was finished, I was like, oh, now I know what, I want to know what happens now. I know I really wanted it to go on because I was so wrapped up in the story. So it's quite interesting. I think there's definitely a lot of material there for the sequel. And I love the whole kind of different cast of characters that you got in.
Radio Gorgeous. Online, on your phone, on a podcast, or on your tablet. Listen anywhere, anytime.
One of the things I was interested in, just from a narrative point of view, was that when you told the story from two characters' points of view, and we alternate the chapters between them. But there's a point in the middle of the book where you tell an actual narrative piece of the story from a fictional novel in the book.
Right.
Did you always plan to do that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. That was always part of my concept for the novel, was that I would include an excerpt from Lois's sort of fictionalized version of the abduction, which was really fun to write, actually.
Were you tempted to drip feed more bits of it in? Because actually, I think it worked really well as a section. And it was quite a sort of gutsy thing to do as a writer, to just change your narrative style and put something like that bang in the middle of it, and then not go back and do it again.
Yeah, it was a bit, I guess.
I thought it was lovely. I thought it was really clever. So how do you write, Maggie? What's your kind of routine? How did you get this down on paper? Because it's a very well-crafted book.
First of all, thank you. And second of all, I am a strangely routineless creature compared to some writers. I'm realizing that some writers are very routine driven and incredibly disciplined. And I wish that I were that kind of writer in some ways, but I'm really not. I wrote this novel in spurts. So occasionally I would be writing really intensely, like many hours a day. And I would go sit down pretty early in the day and just write and write and write. But I also teach at a university. I have a job. I can't always do that. And so there were also times when I was not really moving forward. I would sit down when I had a chance to, and I would sort of read over what I had written and make some tweaks and try to keep it fresh in my mind. Aside from that, I'm not a morning person. I'm much more likely to be up writing late at night. I write better at 2 in the morning than I do at 8 in the morning. I'm sorry to confess.
I think it's whatever works for the individual, isn't it? And I think it's a lot to do with kind of lack of distraction and also letting your subconscious kind of mull it over. And then you get to the point where you can write. And actually, sometimes that's first thing in the morning and sometimes that's really late at night. And then it just comes to you. I was wondering, does your profession make you more critical of your writing?
I think it can. I think that's a danger in a way. I'm never going to be Virginia Woolf. And so if I judge myself by that standard, then I'm doomed, right? so it's sort of hard sometimes to let that go. But I feel as if I've sort of, it's not that what I do as a writer and what I do as a professor are completely disconnected from each other, because they're not at all. But I feel as if I have sort of compartmentalized enough that I can be Maggie Mitchell, the writer, and then I can be Dr. Mitchell, the professor. And Dr. Mitchell doesn't necessarily come in and tear Maggie's books apart. I'm able to sort of keep her in check enough that she does.
I think that's brilliant, because I think it's quite a brave thing to do, because if you are teaching creative writing and you are kind of, you have to, as a professor, be quite critical of other people's work. I was wondering if you kind of look through what you've written and go, oh, I can't say that, or I can't do that, or that's rubbish, or, you know, as we all do as writers, you know, sometimes you...
Sure.
You
sure. And sometimes certainly do. But and I've always had a sort of a self-critical tendency that I think up to a point is a really good thing, of course, because it keeps you from writing crap, you know, it's to have that mechanism. And I, even when I was writing my scholarly dissertation, I remember my dissertation director used to ask me sometimes, who is this voice in the margins? And I would realize that I had been scribbling sort of nasty notes to myself about the flaws in my argument. So I do have those tendencies in a way, but luckily it doesn't keep me from writing.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
Long may you write, I have to say, because you've obviously got a massive talent for it. What are you writing next, Maggie? What are you working on?
I'm working on a new novel. I'm still in the pretty early stages. I'm really wrestling with my material. And this is a project that's going to take a lot of research.
Okay.
So that's sort of a new challenge for me in a way.
Lots of research for this one, for Pretty Ears?
Very little. I read a little bit about sort of the history of abductions in the 80s and 90s, but I didn't really use that to model the abduction in the novel. I was more thinking about what sort of shaped people's fears in the 80s and 90s, like why people became sort of obsessed with the idea that their children would be stolen.
Yeah.
And so I did a little bit of research on that, and I did a little bit of sort of location research, although mostly I just drew the locations from places that I was connected to in some way.
Yeah.
So not a ton of research for that novel, really. But this one is going to require research on insane asylums at the turn of the century and artist models in early 20th century New York City. And it's going to be a challenging project, but I'm really excited about it.
Wow. It sounds brilliant. I can't wait to read it. Maggie, thank you so much for talking to us. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and to read your fabulous book. I really hope that everybody out there goes and gets a copy and is as gripped as I was. Very much, very, very best wishes for your future in your writing career, Maggie, and all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jo. It was great talking to you.
Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.